Hello, I'm Michelle Hanratty. Thank you for listening to Sound Optometry. Just a reminder that you will no longer receive a CPD point by listening to this episode of the podcast. But if you subscribe and listen to the most recent episodes of Sound Optometry, you can gain CPD points. I hope you enjoy this episode of Sound Optometry. Hello, I'm optometrist Michelle Hanratty. Welcome to Sound Optometry. This is the podcast from Docket, part of a high-quality continuing education and training programme for all UK-registered optometrists. You can gain one CET point by listening to this podcast and completing the exercise on our website, docket.info. With case studies and in-depth conversations, these podcasts explore the topics that matter the most to us optometrists. This month, we've got a special edition. I'll be talking to two surgeons about cataracts. They're colleagues and friends, but what makes this story particularly unusual is that one operated on the other. Arijit Mitra and Ajay Tyagi are both consultant ophthalmologists for Sandwell and West Birmingham NHS Trust. Ajay is also a divisional director. But in this case, Arijit, who's only 45, was the cataract patient, and Ajay was the surgeon who operated on him. Hello, Arijit and Ajay. Thank you for joining me today. It's great to have you here. Now, you both work together and you're colleagues, but I guess it's not very often that you ask a colleague to take a knife to you, is it?
Not really. However, there are exceptions to every rule. And having trained under Ajay and having seen his surgical outcome, I had absolutely every confidence to make that decision. And I honestly didn't think twice. And just one small thing. I remember Ajay asking me at least twice before the surgery, how are you feeling? Actually, my response was, I'm feeling great, but I never had the courage to actually ask him, how are you feeling? But I knew that I was in good hands. So I was absolutely confident about the whole package. Yes. I had no second thoughts about it.
And that's really good to know, because I think patients like to have that confidence in their surgeons. And I think that's why it's really important to have that really good communication with your patients beforehand when you meet them and to instill that confidence. Ajay, how did you find operating on a friend and a colleague?
Right. So what I would say, Michelle, is that Arijit in his own world is a very accomplished and excellent surgeon and a clinician. So when Arijit did ask me about, how about doing my cataract surgery, it was humbling, I will say. That's the first thing which came into my mind, because I have operated on a lot of my consultants, colleagues in ophthalmology, orthopedics, and so forth. But they haven't been to a certain degree as young as Arijit. That's the first thing I will say, because as you'll discover that it was a secondary cataract, so usually they've been much older than him. But then it moves on from humbling to saying, well, it's my responsibility to try and have the best possible outcome, because he's young, he's got a long career ahead of him, and lots of patients who will benefit from his skills that he's learned over so many years. So then it moves on to that responsibility to provide the best outcome that one can get. And that's where the mindset was.
And I suppose that's where your years of experience have come in, because you are a very experienced surgeon. So thank you very much. So Arijit, just to get into the detail a little bit now, you were, as Ajay has said, you were rather young to have a cataract. So how did you come to develop a cataract at such a relatively young age?
Right. So this story goes back to 2018 summer, when I probably had viral conjunctivitis from a patient. So it all goes back to pre-COVID, but just shows you how the importance of hand washing is. So unknowingly, I must have seen a patient or have been in contact with a virus, which could be anywhere on any surface, and then rubbed my eye. And then my left eye developed watering, swelling of the lids, and in a few hours, I realized that something is wrong, started having discharge, discomfort, and then I realized that I've now got a viral conjunctivitis. Then it spread to the other eye, but the left eye really did badly. I realized that I was actually seeing halos around lights, and my vision was definitely dropping. So at that stage, I asked my colleagues to have a look. And I'm fortunate that I had lots of lovely colleagues who were willing to help. And they confirmed the worst thing that you would want to hear that the cornea was involved. So there were subepithelial infiltrates, which is why I was seeing the halos, which is why the vision had dropped. And I was put on half-hourly steroids because the cornea, in their words, was completely white with subepithelial infiltrates. Went on to on a reducing course of Dexafree, which is preservative-free dexamethasone, and then gradually tapered it over 6 weeks. However, 2 weeks later, it again started. So this went on for about 3 or 4 episodes, by which time I was already 6 or 9 months into steroids, at which point they decided to actually convert that to Icarvis, which is cyclosporin. And since then, I've been on cyclosporin for almost a year and a half now. But unfortunately, because of the prolonged use of steroids, I developed unilateral cataract in my left eye. Luckily, the right eye wasn't as involved.
So it really is very much about the potency of the steroid that you had to use, and also the duration, because it was such a prolonged period that then induced this cataract formation.
That's correct.
So how soon after the infection did you notice that your vision was changing due to the cataract?
So interestingly, I actually could not realize what was the problem. Every time my vision went down, I started to look out for the halos, because I knew the halos were one thing that was specific for these subepithelial infiltrates, as opposed to the cataract, which would just generally cause blurring of vision. But certainly after the third episode, when I was on cyclosporin, I definitely noticed that I can't see any halos, definitely, but definitely blurring of vision. So at that point, I had a OCT done just to make sure the macula was okay, and the OCT was fine. So then I asked one of my colleagues to have a dilated fundus examination, and at that point they said, oh, you're actually developing a cataract now. So this was, I would say, about 9 months or 10 months later.
Yeah.
And then what happens is, so I was put on cyclosporin and I was being monitored. And then we decided, you know what, I think it's time to get another opinion and see whether we should do cataract surgery.
And the decision to have cataract surgery, was that because the vision was quite blurry at that point and it was impacting on your visual quality and your ability to do what you needed to do well?
Interestingly, I had no problem in surgery as such, but certainly if I closed one eye and then closed the other eye, I could see the difference. Ajay advised me, and I think that was the right thing to do at that time, is that I shouldn't leave it too late to a point where I lose my binocularity and depth perception and then struggle in surgery.
Yeah, so it's not about just the level of vision that you have. It's the effect that it has on your quality of life or on your ability to do your job, whether you're a bus driver or a surgeon.
Absolutely. So maybe if I was retired, for example, I would have possibly, you know, lived with it for another year or so or 2 years, who knows. But with the job that I was doing, I think it was very important that I got my vision spot on as much as possible, really.
I think so this is an important point, which you also flag up, Michelle, is about your occupation. So it's very important to realize that even if you have good vision, but you have circumstances like glare and halos and you are a driver, you can be referred in for cataract surgery based on that, because you are at risk to yourself and to the general population. So it's important to realize that just vision is not the only indicator to refer in patients for cataract surgery.
Absolutely. And it's not just the vision of both eyes, as you said. It's not just about visual acuity. It's the binocularity as well, which is very important, the depth perception.
I mean, I would just like to add on to that. It's just not the level of vision, but also the quality of vision and the type of job that you're doing, which then makes you take a decision along with the patient. And then, you just carry on from there.
So I mentioned binocularity. In your case, it's particularly interesting because you're actually quite high myope. The cataract's only in one eye. How did you decide on what the refractive target should be for the surgery? Because plano would have left you with anisometropia and no accommodation. It might have been a bit of a challenge.
Yeah. I was actually -7 in both eyes. So essentially, there were quite a few options. The first option was to remain as -5 so that I could then still wear glasses and not think anything about the surgery, because I'm -7 in the other eye. I could probably be able to carry on with a 2 diopter difference in the two eyes. The second option was to go for emmetropia, but if you go for completely 0 and you end up hypermetropia, then that's the worst possible situation for a myope. So therefore, lots of papers have suggested that it's best if you go for maybe -1.5, The reason being, you would end up with probably something like 6/12 vision with minus 1.5 or maybe 6/18 vision. But for all practical purposes, if the other eye is okay, you should still be able to drive without any glasses. So that's what we decided, that we would go for minus 1.5. Definitely not multifocal lenses in my case, because if the opacities came back, I would have a lot of glare and a lot of discomfort with multifocal lenses. So I definitely, that was an easy decision to make.
So you were talking about the corneal opacities that you, on your cornea.
Correct.
Because you were still on cyclosporine at this point, weren't you?
I am still on cyclosporine now.
Still.
Although I'm just using it once every other day. So that was one thing at the back of my mind, that if the corneal opacities came back and I had an multifocal lens in my eye, and I couldn't tolerate it, then that would mean that I would have a secondary operation to remove the lens. And that's when things get messy.
Yes.
So I think the type of lens was very clear.
Mm. And did you try it out with contact lenses first? Because that's something that optometrists can do in practice for their patients, isn't it? If they are in a similar situation, if one eye has developed a cataract and the other eye hasn't yet, and there isn't necessarily a strong desire to have the second eye operated on yet, they can talk to the patient about potential outcomes, and so that a patient can request to be left with some myopia if necessary. Yeah.
So taking Ajay's advice and all the other cornea colleagues' advice, I actually booked a session with Paramjit Gator, our optometrist, who actually not only refracted me to show me what level of vision I'm looking at, but also gave me a contact lens trial for my good eye, which is the right eye. I think that was very important because I've never worn contact lens in my life. And she just wanted to make sure that once my operation is done, I'm not left behind with saying that, oh, now I can't wear contact lens. So you're absolutely correct. We did have one or two sessions before the surgery just to have an idea of what it would be like post-operation, and also to make sure that I can actually tolerate contact lens.
Yes, because you need to wear a contact lens in your other eye now because of the anisometropia.
Correct. So what they've given me is a -6 contact lens to leave me -1. So it's absolutely brilliant. I can actually read pretty much, I can even see what's in my iPhone at a reasonable distance, as well as drive without any problem.
I think, Michelle, I would also say, so in cases of unilateral cataracts, so if you're not thinking of multifocal, which was the right decision for Arijit, is not to have a multifocal or a bifocal, trifocal implant, is for people to think about an optometrist to seriously discuss with their patient about monovision, because it is very useful.
If someone hasn't tried monovision, how comfortable are you in actually providing it surgery-wise? Because otherwise, if a patient doesn't tolerate it, you end up with a patient who's unhappy with their outcome and potentially wanting to have possibly laser correction to change the prescription again.
So I rarely do a monovision without actually a trial of contact lenses, or the only time I'll avoid a trial is if they tell me they're already being monovision to begin with. So, and quite a few of these patients are. They say, I'm using one eye for distance, one for... That's fine. That makes it easy. If not, then I would never put a patient through a monovision surgically without actually getting it tested out.
Yeah. So Arijit, were there any particular risks that you were concerned about in your case?
So as we all know, the risks of cataract surgery are grossly divided into two types. So there is a 1 in 1,000 chance of infection, very severe bleeding, and complete loss of vision. But that can happen with any intraocular surgery. But then you have some specific risks related to cataract surgery, and the commonest being PC rupture and vitreous loss.
Of course, Michelle, I wasn't thinking of having any complications.
Of course not. But had there been any, you would have been the right person to sort them out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the more important bit.
Yeah. So just to say, so if I flip it as a surgeon, what I was thinking of, it starts really in the preoperative status and making sure that Arijit didn't have any predisposing factors which would make the surgery a bit more complicated than what I would like. So we... proper preoperative assessment is important, and there are lots of things you look for, but it is an important bit of your planning your surgery and getting the best possible outcome. Next bit of it is when to do the surgery. Again, Arijit mentioned that we decided to not delay too long for various reasons.
Can I just add to that? The pre-op assessment that Ajay touched on, just to put my context, I'm very short-sighted and I had bilateral laser retinopexy, I think about 20 years ago. So one of the things that he touched on pre-op assessment, when he examined me a couple of weeks before the surgery, he did a fully dilated indented examination, scleral indented examination, to make sure that my retina was completely okay. Why? Because I'm very short-sighted. I have the cataract surgery. Few years or, I don't know, months or years later, I will have EAC laser capsulotomy as well at some point. So all these are increasing my risk factor for retinal detachment. So, and also if on the table there was a PC rupture or vitreous loss, then also that would have increased my risk of retinal detachment. So he made it absolutely sure that the retina was completely well lasered before he said, okay, fine, I can go ahead and do the operation.
That's interesting because there is an increased risk of retinal detachment post-cataract surgery in younger patients if they're under the age of 50. Mm.
Yes. So age is a risk factor. Myopia is a risk factor. Your vitreous loss or PC rupture during cataract surgery is a risk factor. If you have EAC laser capsulotomy after that, that's a risk factor. So all these are important things. So that's why it's very important that a fully dilated scleral indentation takes place before you decide to, you know, do the cataract surgery.
Yeah, so for high risk cases, it's invaluable, that really good preoperative examination.
Yeah.
Arijit, how did you decide whether to have a general anaesthetic? Did you have a general?
I did have a general anaesthetic. The decision was very clear. The problem is I knew all the nurses in the team. Obviously, the surgeon I knew very well. I knew the ODP, the runners. I knew everybody in that team. And I felt that it was in my best interest and also in the interest of the staff that I be put to sleep. So then they can do whatever they want. At least I'm not a factor who will, you know, because subconsciously, if I'm not put to sleep, they will think that every word I utter, Arijit will be hearing that.
Yes.
And that's, I think, not good. No. On the day of the surgery. So I had no doubt that, you know, I would go for general anesthesia.
Yes. And I think once you're asleep and you're quiet and you're covered up, at the end of the day, you're a pair of eyes or one eye that they're operating on.
Absolutely.
And that's what you want to be. You want the team to be completely comfortable.
Yep.
But I must say, Michelle, I mean, I normally do under topical anesthesia is most of my cataract surgery. So Arijit did surprise me. So I had, in my mind, I said, okay, topical anesthesia is what we'll be doing. So when then Arijit said, no, I would prefer a general anesthesia, I said, really?
Yes. That was the conversation. He said, really? And I said, absolutely. I have no doubt.
I said, then that's fine. We'll do it under general anesthetic.
So it's interesting because most patients have cataract surgery under topical anesthesia. And some patients do get quite nervous about the thought of that, but there are sometimes circumstances where a general anesthetic is required or some form of sedation. Uh-huh. And that's where it's invaluable to have that open conversation, communication with the GP as to what the patient's needs are.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Ajay, for you, what was the tensest moment?
It's a difficult one because generally how I would approach Arijit's operation was not thinking too much about it, is the honest answer. Because the more you dwell on things, the more problems you imagine or create in your own mind. And it's not necessary, really. At the end of the day, if you remove Arijit from it, it's just a cataract. So in as a surgeon operating on my colleague, I would say just a few precautions. So in the sense that don't miss out doing something that you'd normally do to any other patient, i.e. don't take shortcuts. So make sure you do a proper examination. You have a proper discussion with your colleague as you would with any other patient. So you've gone through everything because the key thing is you say, oh, well, Arijit knows everything about it. Why should I bother telling him that?
So don't make any assumptions, in other words.
No, absolutely no. There should be no assumptions because when you make assumptions, you actually skip things. And that's why it's important that we did everything that we needed to do to pick things up. But what I would say is that the time, Arijit, I knew that things were now smooth or just going to go smoothly is as soon as I'd done the Rexes, I said, well, we'll be finishing in a few minutes. So that was the key point. It wasn't the tense point. It was, so capsular Rexes, as most of us would know, is it's when you make a opening or a circular opening as possible in the anterior capsule through which you would do the use the ultrasound to do the phacoemulsification. So as soon as the Rexes went well, I said, well, a few minutes we'll be out of here, told the anesthetist to start packing things up.
So Arijit, do you think your experience as a patient will benefit your own patients?
Absolutely, on several fronts. I would start with the day I got admitted. And till the point that the nurse first came in to do the check, I was not even thinking about the surgery. But from that point, I think something struck me that actually I'm going to go under the knife very soon. So that's when I possibly started having a bit of anxiety. Although I knew I was in good hands and I knew everybody and so on. But that was my first thing, that when patients have surgery, they do feel anxious. The second thing I realized, that actually nurses have to do a lot of checks. And although sometimes we do actually push nurses to try and hurry up, but they actually go through numerous checks to make sure that everything is done properly and there is no possibility of any error. During the surgery, obviously, I was put to sleep. But again, after the surgery, I realized how patients wake up and what they go through. I must say that, you know, we all know about the wow effect after cataract surgery. So Ajay told me that at 3:30 in the... So my operation was around 9 o'clock and I was awake, I think, by 10 or half 10. And he said by 3:30, you can take the patch off and start putting the drops in. That experience I will never forget. So I took the patch off and suddenly I realized that the colors were so bright. I didn't even realize that white could be fluorescent white, like cool white, you know, like the LED bulbs, they have cool white and warm white. This was absolutely cool white. And it was absolutely brilliant. So that's the wow effect that I had. Now, what I then realized, I mean, that was obviously an euphoric moment, but then slowly the anisometropia effect came in. And that's the answer basically to your question, what do patients go through? So if you are very myopic, as I am, and you have cataract surgery, no matter how much preparation you take beforehand, this is a learning curve. And actually, I went through quite a bit before I actually got used to it.
Yes.
So, for example, I was wearing my contact lens in the right eye, and so I was left minus one. And in the other eye, as I said, I was minus 1.25. But on days where I forgot my plus 1.5 glass and started reading really small prints, towards the end of the day, I was having tremendous headache. So one of the things I learned is dealing with anisometropia can be a bit of a problem. Accommodation can cause, if you're accommodating too much, it can cause very severe headaches to an extent where some days I had to take ibuprofen and so on. But now I'm more used to it. The more I realize that, oh, this is not good, I actually immediately remember my glasses, I put it on, and therefore I've learned how to deal with accommodation.
So you've developed a good coping mechanism.
Absolutely.
So to either of you or both of you, if an optometrist is referring a patient for cataract surgery, what would you like the optometrist to tell the patient?
So give them a realistic idea of what they are going to achieve by having the cataract surgery. Example being, let's say a patient has quite a significant cataract, but also a large discoform scar or a geographic atrophy. Then to tell the patient that, you know, you've got a cataract, go and have this done. It will improve your peripheral vision so that you don't bump into things, but don't expect a lot to improve your central vision. So that sort of realistic expectation is what is very important when the patient first understands that they've got a cataract and that they are being referred for a cataract surgery.
Yes, because patients sometimes are disappointed when they've had their cataract surgery and they have got some underlying pathology that they weren't aware of, but their neighbour had cataract surgery and can see really well. So they always compare themselves to other people.
Absolutely.
And so it's good to prepare them beforehand.
Absolutely.
To make sure that their expectations are realistic.
Yeah. I would say, Michelle, the referring optometrist or optom should probably look at, say, two things. One, do they need the surgery? Okay, so the need is important. Just because you have cataract doesn't mean it needs to be removed. So does the patient need the surgery? Now, the need is, as we discussed before, if you're a driver, glare, halos, whatever. And the second bit is whether the patient wants the surgery. And in wants the surgery is where you come in and say, well, these are the risk and benefit of this procedure. So then the patient decides whether I actually want the surgery. So if they stick to two things, A, needs the surgery, and then whether the patient wants the surgery.
And of course, that the patient is prepared to accept that no procedure is without risk.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Optometrists are quite often now doing post-operative checks in the community. So is there anything in particular that those optometrists should be looking for at these checks?
So usually what I've seen is optometrists are very good at picking up inflammation, which is quite common post-operatively, especially when they when patients sort of start weaning the drops or stopping the drops, any pressure problems, if there is any, because they've used steroids for about 4 weeks. Then they look at the back of the eye, and we should make sure that they don't have any inflammation in the macula, so macular edema, which can happen at times. And all these, if everything is okay and the vision is very good, then only, obviously, you can then start thinking of discharging the patient. But yes, a full examination from front to back, and with particular importance to inflammation, intraocular pressure, and macular status.
So it's quite common, and this might be a question for you to answer actually, Ajay. Quite often patients do phone up practices and say, since I've had my cataract surgery, I think I've got more floaters. Do I need to worry about this?
Yeah. So the answer is, A, were they pre-existing or not? So if they were pre-existing, it's not a major problem. So if they started after the surgery, then really, is it in the immediate post-operative period? If the answer is yes, it's still not a worry because it's part and parcel of the surgical bit. If it started few weeks, and I mean, you know, it's difficult to quantify, Michelle, weeks is how many weeks, but roughly, if you were to ask me, I would say 4 to 6 weeks onward, new floaters, I would be concerned about it. Okay, because particularly at that is the time period where due to the shift in the lens, vitreous diaphragm and all that business, there is a likelihood of a posterior vitreous detachment. And that would be the key time that they could develop a retinal tear.
So a patient coming in for a post-operative check at 4 to 6 weeks, he reports a change in floaters or an onset of new floaters, we would dilate them, check the peripheral fundus. And if we have any doubts, we would refer them to you,
absolutely.
For an opinion.
Yeah, and so that would be perfecting how to manage the floater in a post-operative, post-cataract eye. I have just a couple of more things to add for my optometrist colleague who are doing post-operative reviews. One is do not ignore subtle signs. I'll tell you why. And as a doctor, I'm equally liable for that. So, you know, you tend to ignore. It's rush as well. So you are seeing many patients or you are tied up that day and you see an eye which is not red, but it's not white either. It's pink. But it shouldn't be pink because it's 4 weeks down the line.
Yes.
So it's a very subtle sign, but that subtle sign can tell you that this patient has underlying inflammation, might have a slightly raised intraocular pressure, could occasionally have the early signs of endophthalmitis infection. So try and pick up on those subtle signs. So don't ignore them, however busy you are. And I'm not telling my optometrist colleague this. I tell this to my ophthalmology colleagues as well, including I remind myself about it. The other bit I would like to flag up is never be hesitant or ashamed of seeking a second opinion. If you feel that things aren't right, there's a mismatch between the patient's vision and what you look at it, just send them into the hospital for a check. You know, we'll always send back a report to say you were right in thinking there's nothing or there was something like this and this is what we've done about it. And medicine as such is lifelong learning. So if the time you say, I know it all, well, time to pack up and go home.
So patients need to have surgery and they have to want surgery as well because no procedure is without risk. So patients have to be able to accept that sometimes complications may happen.
Absolutely. One of the most important reasons for complaints is communication. If the patient is assured that you as a doctor or an optician has done everything possible and then something goes wrong during the surgery, which is a known risk, then most people will be actually okay with it. So it all comes down to communication. And as long as you've actually given that patient that chair time before and after surgery, or even when things go wrong, if you've explained to them why it went wrong and what you're going to do to make sure you can get the best outcome from there on, I think most patients will be happy to accept that.
Yes, happy. Not necessarily happy, but reassured.
Not really happy, but yes. Reassured. They will be reassured that you've done everything possible to get the best outcome for them.
Yes. Arijit Mitra and Ajay Tyagi, both consultant ophthalmologists for Sandwell and West Birmingham NHS Trust. If you would like more information about dealing with the aspects of cataracts covered in this episode, visit our website docket.info and click on Sound Optometry to find the resources and reading materials. Listening to this podcast and completing the short learning exercise will gain you one CET point. This episode complements our recently launched cataract course, a three-part series that covers the entire patient pathway, starting with the pathophysiology of cataract all the way to post-operative patient management. We'd love to hear from you with any suggestions for subjects or questions you might have about any of the areas that we've covered. You can email us podcast@docket.info or tweet @soundoptometry. I'm Michelle Hanratty. Thanks for listening.